Welcome back to the Health Revival Show. I am very excited for today's podcast. We are welcoming Dr. Teresa Lyons. She is the founder and CEO of Navigating Autism, a groundbreaking platform dedicated to turning autism complexity into clarity. And if you've listened to the show, you know we've talked about this in different ways, but today we are excited to interview her. She has an amazing background as an international autism educator and an Ivy League scientist. So she is just going to bring some eye-opening conversation for you all today. If you know someone on the spectrum, if you know someone who is struggling, please share this episode with them as she's going to share some amazing tools and her platform that could be a great resource. So welcome to the show, Dr. Lyons. Please introduce yourself to the audience and tell us a little bit more about you and how you got involved in this work that you do.
Sure. So thank you for having me. I got involved in autism solely because of my daughter. So I have a background in the pharmaceutical industry. My PhD is in computational chemistry from Yale. I worked in the pharmaceutical industry in R&D, so drug discovery. And then I transitioned to the marketing side, the business side. And that's when my daughter was diagnosed with autism. And so when I asked, all right, what are we doing? What's the plan? There really wasn't a good answer. It was just like, well, this is lifelong and things are just going to get worse. They're not going to get better. And as a strategist in the pharmaceutical industry, that did not sit well with me. So it really became, let me learn the science, the real science, and see what I can do.
Wow. And I think it's also when it's personal to you as a mother, it makes you just even go 10,000.
Oh my goodness. Right? Yes, yes, yes. So, I mean, I had the skills, right? So reading PubMed and doing all that came naturally, right? I didn't need to teach myself that at all. It's so much so where I would pop popcorn, and that was the extent of like my good days, my happy days. How did I like unwind? It was like, I'll just have some popcorn while I read all this.
Well, I'm excited for you to share, you know, all the things that you've learned and the ways that you're helping people, because we know this is a need for many families. So what would you say is one of the biggest problems that parents face today when they are dealing with a diagnosis or an autistic child?
I would say the most problematic thing is just this overwhelm of information and not really being able to sort out what's a good direction, what is a good optimal outcome for their child. There's so much on TikTok and just all this noise that it's really hard to sort out. So the most important scientific fact that parents need to know is that in 2023, a research publication from Massachusetts showed that 37% of kids with autism lose their diagnosis, meaning they go on to go to school and not need extra supports or speech therapy or occupational therapy or all these other things that we normally associate autism with. And over the decades, this has been a growing percentage. So back when my daughter was diagnosed, it was about 10% of kids lost their diagnosis. And the scientists used to call it an optimal outcome. And that was what, oh, okay. And now that I know that an optimal outcome is achievable, that was what my focus was. And so now that number has grown to 37%. So it's really important for parents to not let anyone put expectations on their child, like they'll never be able to do X, Y, Z, or it's just not true.
So something that we work a lot in is digestive health and overall inflammation within the body. And I don't think a lot of people that obviously don't have personal experience dealing with an autistic child of their own or, you know, managing and having to fight through all of the ups and downs of that, realize that digestion can be a really big issue that autistic kids can struggle with. So I'd love for you to talk a little bit about why is it so common for autism to be related to digestive difficulties? And what does science seem to say about the connection going on there?
All right, if you're dealing with water retention, you're waking up puffy, your ankles or your wrists are really swollen, or you can't get your rings off, and maybe you're even dragging throughout the day, no matter how much water you drink, there's actually a good chance that you're not actually hydrating properly.
Exactly, because water alone is not enough. You need electrolytes, you need sodium, potassium, magnesium, because those things actually pull water into your cells. Otherwise, you're basically just flushing it out and wondering why you're still tired, you're still bloated, and you're still sluggish.
But here's the thing. Most electrolyte supplements out there aren't helping you in any way because a lot of them contain things like natural flavors, food dyes, and maltodextrin, which can irritate your gut. And these things can also spike your blood sugar when you're trying to heal.
That's why we both started using Buoy. It's super simple, just trace minerals and electrolytes in liquid form. No flavors, no colors, no sugar, no sweeteners, and you squeeze it into whatever you are drinking. Water, coffee, tea, smoothies, you name it.
And it's clinically backed by science too. So studies have shown that Buoy helps you hydrate better, 64% better in fact, and that's data coming from key blood and urinary markers, not just marketing fluff. And honestly, you can feel the difference. I've had many clients tell me their digestion's improved, they have less headaches, and they're better energy throughout the day.
And Buoy isn't just for people that go to the gym all the time and sweat a bunch. They actually offer a 35% lifetime discount for anyone that's struggling with chronic illnesses. Things like POTS, Hashimoto's, Crohn's disease, chronic migraines, and every autoimmune condition. They're really committed to making better hydration accessible to people who need it most.
I actually throw it in my coffee every morning because it's such an easy upgrade. You don't even taste it, but you're definitely going to notice if you miss it.
If you're tired of playing hydration roulette and want something that actually supports your body, you've got to try Buoy. It's honestly one of the simplest ways to feel better faster.
Sure. So the top issues that parents might notice with digestion is gas and bloating, constipation, diarrhea, sometimes alternating constipation and diarrhea. So those are all signs that digestion is not optimal, especially if you see a child whose stomach starts bloating after they're eating. There are certain signs where it's obvious and it's really hard to deny. Although sometimes when you go to a doctor's and you say, oh, my child's bloating, that might not be an appropriate doctor to be in front of if they just kind of say, well, that's autism. You know, everyone gets bloated, that kind of thing. You really want to make sure you're working with people who take your concerns seriously. So digestive issues are common. More than 60% of kids with autism experience some kind of GI upset or distress at some point in their life. And it can contribute to so much. If someone's constipated, right, then that can impact their learning because they're not feeling comfortable. It can impact the way they're walking, right? So they might be walking on their toes. There's so much that gets related into digestion that people see as symptoms of autism, but don't really understand that those symptoms certainly could be addressed.
Can you talk about some other symptoms that maybe like what was for you, I think something's going on, like for with your daughter or in general with autism, what to kind of look for as a parent if something's going on and when did you start noticing it for your daughter?
Yeah. So one thing, so the intuition of a parent is very strong. And unfortunately, we often get told that's nothing to worry about. And then when we ignore these warning signs, right? So constipation, if we ignore that for an extended period of time, meaning we don't resolve that health issue, we don't get to the underlying cause of what is causing that constipation, then things like posturing, which is common in autism. The posturing means you might see your child hanging over the arm of the couch, right? Doing these weird things, but what they're doing is putting pressure on their stomach and they're actually trying to either relieve pain, relieve some of the bloating, or help with constipation. So there's so much of what we experience and those initial warning signs with autism, as with anything, if you don't address them, then they just continue to grow in a negative way. And then that's when you start to see some of these more problematic behaviors that are typically associated with autism, like posturing.
Yeah, I think too, in terms of the constipation aspect, I mean, a large part of what we do in our practice, and I talk about all the time on my social media page, is that you have to ask the bigger question, what's driving this? It's not a Miralax deficiency as much as you want to go pediatrician, but we can have that debate about, you know, how toxic Miralax is too, you know, and all of these things that build up in the body because we are not eliminating. And therefore, then this is throwing off neurotransmitters and impacting the blood-brain barrier and those types of things. So I love that you mentioned the posturing and how that could make sense for someone new with constipation. But let's talk a little bit about the outdated thinking, because I think, again, when people are given these diagnoses or they're going into the pediatrician and they're saying, okay, let's keep an eye on it. Let's keep a watch on it.
Right.
A lot from people.
It's just watch and see.
What should families know that they can do in terms of the resources maybe that you offer, or that could be something that you can say, hey, this is how I was feeling, and this is some of the ways that I started to learn more about this without this dooming diagnosis yet? Because I know that some people want a diagnosis, but then other people find that, like you mentioned before, their language that they're using, they'll never do this, or this is just how they are, or, you know, maybe talking about like things in ways that we could shift or reframe in front of our children so that we can bring some normalcy to them and that there's nothing wrong with them, right? They're beautiful children. They're designed by God. There's a lot of things that we can do to support them. So I know that's probably a very loaded question, but if you go back to yourself, right, in that situation where you're starting to speculate, you're starting to maybe see some signs and symptoms, what resources do you wish that you had at that point in time? And where would you go today if that was where you were years ago?
Certainly. So the most important thing to know is that autism diagnosis does not have to be permanent for everyone. And so I think that's the scary part, where some parents are hesitant, and some parents, when the doctor tells them, well, let's just wait and see, they're like, okay, right? Because we all hope that things just work itself out. But really with autism, you want to be proactive. And unfortunately, what happens with autism a lot is that once someone gets that diagnosis, then somehow it's okay to get less medical care to address these different needs. So all of a sudden, the autism diagnosis, and well, they're constipated. Yeah, well, that just happens, right? And so much of what we take for granted for optimal health, once there's an autism diagnosis, it's as if then that person receives substandard care, which is not helpful in any way whatsoever. I wish way back in the beginning, I knew that autism wasn't permanent, because then I feel like I would take action a lot more and have that sense of urgency of, okay, let me understand this, not be so scared of that diagnosis, and let me understand the science. So, you know, we talked about constipation. There's so much that rolls up into that. So if a child has constipation, autism or not, that's something that needs to be resolved. So you can start looking at, okay, is there a gut infection, right? Is there gut bacteria out of balance? Is there leaky gut, and testing on permeability, right? All of these things can and should be addressed in someone with autism or even without autism. So that's really the place to start, is to not just accept that your child's always going to have all these complex health issues, because that's not really what autism is.
Yeah. And it creates greater risk, I would say, for other things to arise in terms of health issues, because again, they're not detoxing appropriately and getting things out. Obviously, the child's not going to feel good either, in which that would result in more, you know, behavioral issues. So you mentioned what autism is. Can you define what autism is?
Well, let me first start with addressing the health concerns, which is important. So there's published research that shows the life expectancy of someone who retains the autism diagnosis is drastically reduced all over the world, regardless of what country. There's very few things that are consistent in autism research, and a reduction in life expectancy is one of those. So in the US, the last research article that looked at this showed that someone who retains their autism diagnosis, their life expectancy is 36. So these are very real medical issues that certainly you want to resolve. So for people who are on that lower functioning side of the spectrums, that would be seizures, elopement, accidents. So a lot of those are the reasons for death. And then on the higher functioning side, death by suicide is what the researchers find is the most common cause. And so these are all issues that need attention. So for parents, really having that focus on gut health, overall health, looking at inflammation, looking at vitamin D status, all of these things that we know are important for health in general are just as important, if not even more important, for someone with an autism diagnosis.
So what do you see in blood work or in testing or things of that nature with autism versus maybe, you know, quote unquote non-autistic children. Do you notice anything really common that seems to shine through, aside from obviously GI dysfunction and what we're seeing, you know, gut imbalances and leaky gut and things of that nature? Do you notice any other? I know getting blood work with kids is hard, but any other tests?
Yeah. Autism is so complex in that you can't just run one blood test, right? Autism, how is it diagnosed? It's diagnosed based on observation. So there's no lab test to give an autism diagnosis. There's no urine test or blood work or any MRI. There's nothing along those lines. And that is what makes autism complex. And the other complexity is the different contributing factors. So there's no research publication that says, okay, autism is caused by this. However, there's a lot of research that shows increased risk. So something like pollution, air pollution carries increased risk in third trimester of a woman being pregnant. If she's exposed to a certain level of air pollution, then the increased risk of autism for that baby is 30%. Whereas for that same level of pollution, the child 2 years and younger, if they're experiencing that same level of pollution, their risk increases to 60%, right? So there are all these different risk factors. You can look at risk factors for heavy metal exposure. You can look at risk factors for different viruses and all these different types of infections. But the important part then is to really do the proper testing so that you can quantify for your child what is it that is specifically causing some of these health issues. And that's where it gets complex, right? Because this is not a cookie cutter approach. You can't just say, all right, test vitamin D, B12, methylmalonic acid, and do a GI map. Right? Because that's not going to explain everything for everybody. And so it really becomes understanding the chemistry and biology of that child. And this takes time. So when you start to do functional medicine testing and you come up with, this might be a toxin, let's say a particular toxin, right? So then you can start detoxing that. But then there's so much more else involved, right? So leaky gut, that contributes to this. And what's dysbiosis? Are there any other gut infections that are opportunistic? And then looking at the immune system. So all of this can get wrapped up in a very small body, and it takes time and dedication to really tease it out.
Yeah. And I know that's one thing that you talk about in terms of the autism matrix, right? So testing would be part of that if you were working with a family. What are some other tools and resources that you really encourage parents to utilize, even for themselves? Because obviously, yes, parents, as we kind of talked offline, this is really important because you're caring for that child, but you're also learning about something that maybe you've never learned about before. This is new to you, and navigating that can be very stressful. And sometimes that can make the child feel the stress, and everybody's nervous system is then dysregulated. And that's not going to help, you know, the symptoms and the behavior and improvements that we're looking for. So I'd love to hear you talk a little bit about that outside of the testing and some of the supplement protocols and the detox and everything that's important. What about the home environment and the parents educating and their support resources and, you know, how they manage this journey?
Well, mindset is massively important. And there's new research that is just starting to come out about parents and when their autistic children are in the teenage years. So research has shown there's an increased risk for PTSD diagnosis of the parent from the experience of raising a child with autism, just because there's so much complexity. And especially if the child has autism and emotional dysregulation, that's really where there's added stress. And a PTSD diagnosis is something that is shown to be on the rise for parents with whose children have autism. So this is a very real aspect of autism. So a parent's mindset and how they're caring for themselves and how they're going through this journey, this is not something that can be resolved overnight. And there is this balance between a parent's nervous system and the child's nervous system. So to just go back to the PTSD information, there also was a clinical study done just very recently within the last year. And it was small. They looked at seven parents whose children had autism and emotional dysregulation, and all seven of them had a PTSD diagnosis, particularly from the experience of raising the child. And they did EMDR therapy. It was, you know, 5 to 7 sessions, so relatively a short amount of therapy. And all seven of those parents, it was 5 mothers and 2 dads, all seven of those parents lost their PTSD diagnosis. So the EMDR was successful in helping them really process that stress. And not only did their nervous systems, right, relax and calm down, but the researchers were able to measure that in 5 of them, the children also received benefit of their nervous system relaxing, and there was a lot more emotional regulation. So this is how parents want to think about this, where if they're getting stressed and angst and tight, their child can feel it. And then everyone just increases in anxiety and stressful situations. So it's incredibly hard to take a step back and kind of breathe, start taking care of yourself, start maybe going for walks, doing exercising, meditating. There's so much that parents can do, but it's hard to take that time out because we think, oh, we should be doing everything for our child. But if we're doing that and we're only getting more and more upset, then it's really not the best way to go about it. So you really want to carve out that time, because as you calm down, then your child calms down as well.
I think autism or not, that's very true. I know that in my own life, my family. What would you say to parents, individuals who maybe, you know, let's say mom is really working hard at this and dad is in and out of the house, he's traveling, he's working, or maybe it's a divided family and they're flipping back and forth. Any tips for that parent that's trying to be the emotional regulator and trying to be the rock, but maybe is dealing with, you know, someone who isn't emotionally regulated yet? And so then, you know, it can be going, I have had some families I've worked with where behaviors are dramatically different when they're coming back home from the other parent.
Okay. Yep. Yep. Or that might be due to
environment because they were traveling or whatever it might be, but it's very hard when mom and dad or whatever caregivers are not aligned.
Right. All right. So there's a lot of things we can certainly discuss in that question. So one thing could be you might have one parent who is a believer who's like, I know things can get better. I'm going to work at this. I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to use functional medicine and get at the root cause. And then there might be another parent who's saying, listen, this is just autism. It's not going to get better. Right. And so there might be a misalignment of what is believable for the child. And usually for the parent who's working hard, it's about really focusing on what is meaningful and getting very laser focused on having a change there. So one of the parents that I worked with was experiencing the same thing, where there was one behavior that the child kept doing. The child kept eating leaves and kept putting shoes in his mouth, and it would get one parent very upset. And the other parent was like, no, we can get at the health issue. And so they did resolve the health issue within a few weeks. And then that parent became a believer and was like, okay, what else can we do? Right. So a lot of times, if you take your energy instead of arguing and trying to convince someone, if you take that energy and focus on having that impact, like getting really diligent, what are the lab tests that we need to do? What diet changes, and being consistent, because you will see that benefit. You will see that change when you identify a health issue, then you can address it and then other things change. And then it gets easier for other people to believe you when you get that momentum going. So that's definitely one way to handle when there's two parents and they have differing views on what's possible.
Yeah. I'm sure this comes down to diet as well as our...
Oh, yeah. Diet is so... Everything is important with autism, right? Because many of these kids, genetics is important as well. That's another way that things get very complex, right? How could two people maybe be exposed to the same amount of air pollution, right? We could take that example of the one-year-old getting exposed to air pollution, and then both of them have a 60% increase in autism, whereas let's say one gets a diagnosis and one doesn't. There might be genetic factors that are underlying. So there's so many things that have to be understood to then have that focus to have that meaningful change.
Yeah. What would you say in terms of the diet that you see is utmost important for these kiddos?
So gluten-free is obviously important because you want to take the burden off the immune system, right? And if you're dealing with leaky gut, a lot of digestive issues, you don't want to complicate things, right? So that is one of those first steps. And then the other aspect to diet that's important is just understanding, am I causing inflammation by giving my child something to eat? So leucovorin is something that has been talked about in mainstream media for the past month or so since Trump and RFK Jr. made the announcement that leucovorin is now approved for autism. And the one aspect that doesn't get talked about much is the reason why leucovorin is so impactful is that it's overcoming different antibodies that are in the brains of about 70% of kids with autism. And so when you think about that, it's like a five-year-old has an autoimmune component to autism that is so severe, it's impacting speech. And yes, for 70% of kids with autism who have these antibodies, that is part of the reason why speech might be difficult. And one of the triggers, right? Because how is their body attacking their own body? They're five, right? They haven't been on this world that long. Part of that is a reaction to something like dairy. So when we're eating things that are causing inflammation, we have to be mindful of what is the true impact. So many kids who are on leucovorin, right, you do the FRAT test, you find out if your child has the antibodies. If so, then you get a prescription for leucovorin, which is prescription B9. And then to go one step further is the child really needs to be dairy-free, because what the researchers have found was that dairy has an ability to increase the antibodies that are found in the brain. So diet, everything gets mixed together, but diet is absolutely important and it can't be ignored.
Interesting. And it's interesting that leucovorin is essentially really high dose folate, right? Like you were talking about with the B9. And so what we know about
folinic acid.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. Yes. And so what we know about folinic acid, B9 is how much it supports methylation and detoxification in the body, right?
Correct. Exactly. See, and you can't, with autism, it's there's no silo, right? So it's like, okay, folate is so important for the brain, yes, but it's so important for so many other things. And you start getting into the B vitamins, you get into the importance of detoxing. And it just is all related. So you don't want to have this singular view of what's the one thing I can do to change my child, right? It's not just one thing. You have to be really meticulous and understand all these different aspects. And that's why that journey is long and you have to have patience with yourself, because it doesn't go right 100% of the time, right? Sometimes a child doesn't even want to take the supplement or prescription that you have, right? So then it's like, oh my goodness, we did all this work to figure this out. And now, not only that, I have to figure out how to get this in you.
Yeah.
So it's definitely stressful, but it's totally worth it.
Yeah.
100% worth it.
I always just find it interesting to see like the themes of all the little pieces that make sense of what's basically become. Of, you know, okay, pollution, exposure, right? High levels of certain things that the body is then additional stress to be able to clear and detoxify things, right? And then, you know, constipation and digestive related issues that we know also play a role in impairment of detoxification of the body, right? And then folinic acid in high doses that we know affects methylation and MTHFR mutations, right? The ability to detoxify via phase two pathways. And so it's just always so interesting to me to see, like, sure, this is not ever a blanket approach statement, right? It's not like, this is it. This is what's the problem with every autism case. Like, but it's just always, this seems to be a big piece of it, you know, a huge piece of it in terms of maybe the body, especially with little ones, like the inability of our body to be able to detoxify. And we know, yes, diagnoses have gotten much better over the past couple of decades with autism, but we also know the level of exposure to toxins has increased dramatically over the past couple of decades, you know? And so I don't think that there's like a coincidence of it's just better diagnosis. I'm sure it is also this massive level of exposure that unfortunately we now have in this world, you know, and right. Our poor little ones that are, it just breaks my heart. Like I have two little kids. Liz has two little kids. Like their bodies aren't meant to deal with it. And I think we're seeing that, you know, like,
yeah, the sense of overwhelm, right? So when you think about a 5-year-old, how they have an autoimmune issue relating to speech, right? That's what the science is starting to show. You can do the FRAT test, the folate test, and measure antibodies. And it needs to have us take a pause and say, that's just not right for a young child to have an autoimmune issue so early in life. It's just very difficult. And that is why you really want to support their body with as much as possible. Yeah, changing their diet, making sure there's not inflammatory, making sure digestion is complete, making sure they have vitamin D, have enough calcium, all of these aspects that are so vitally important that many times we just take for granted.
Yeah. And I think too, you know, when you're looking at the food supply that we have here, right, in the United States, it's much different than other areas. And it's generally full of things that are very inflammatory or things that some people cannot, for example, artificial synthetic folic acid. Women are told in their pregnancy, right? They're told to give that to their, it's in formulas. Working with a friend of mine, she's a functional practitioner as well. And she's like, it is near impossible to find folate instead of folic acid in even some of the formulas. Well, and it's frustrating because if we do get into the genetic side, that is going to create a lot of compromise because it dirties up those pathways and it's seemingly everywhere, right? It's everything and fortified. So all of the little bodies, I remember what I ate when I was small, cereal, you know, breads, toast, those types of things. And so it's just, it's an accumulation of everything like we're talking about here. Before we, you know, round out the podcast, I wanted to bring something up because I'm just looking at this pharmaceutical and it says the trial period is 4 to 6 months before judging response.
And for leucovorin.
For leucovorin, yes. I would love to hear from you what you see in clinical practice. As we talked about offline, some of these children, it takes longer. We go slower. We have wins along the way, but it is not as fast or as quick as any of us would like. So share with us generally, see, and obviously with a pharmaceutical, 4 to 6 months before judging response, that would align with, I feel, what we see, with children. We see gradual improvements, but one of the things that I talk with parents about is it less frequent and less intense in terms of like a behavior outburst, right? And then analyzing what were the 48 hours, 72 hours prior to that behavioral outburst? Was there anything different that changed? Stressors, food-wise, because we're always trying to figure out how do we help them minimize those outbursts that are very stressful.
Right.
And so it's just coming back and just constantly, at least for me, having to have those reminders to parents, it's going to take time. It's not that this is not working. It's that things are going to take longer than you want. So I'd love to hear you speak on that and what you're seeing in the research, if it's there, what you're seeing in clinical practice with these families as to how we let go of that instant gratification mindset, or, you know, at what point do you think to someone, okay, maybe you have done that for 6 months and it didn't really help that much. Because I think people give up too early or they're on the brink of a breakthrough.
Definitely. So the way I usually approach pacing, right? Because every parent is always like, okay, when is this going to be over? When are we going to be done? Right? And you start doing things. If you're unhappy, you're trying to go too fast. It's as simple as that. If you're just, I'm trying to do it. This is your child's childhood. This is your parenting experience. And you can just accept it. As soon as you get an autism diagnosis, this is not going to be what you expected. It's not in any way. I mean, I can take my life, my parenting experience. There's very little that I'm doing that I actually thought I would be doing. So there comes a moment of where you have to accept what this is. And that doesn't necessarily mean you can't go fast. You can't, have expectations of things to go a certain way, but you have to be mindful that it is a process. Things aren't going to change 100% overnight, but that's why you want to use science to guide you, right? So let's just take this leucovorin example. So there's 5 clinical trials that have been done. They're relatively small, so 100 patients or less. And the length of the clinical trial was 3 months. So parents definitely need to understand that, okay, if the frat test came back positive and we're going to start leucovorin, we start off small. A good doctor will titrate up leucovorin, because if you give too much too quickly, as with most things in life, then it won't go well. So with leucovorin specifically, you get aggressive behaviors, which nobody wants to see. And no child with autism wants to be aggressive either. You see hyperactivity, you see disruptions in sleep. Pacing is something that you have to keep in mind, because let's say you do leucovorin and you say, I don't want to go slow. I'm just going to give, 5 milligrams. Let's just start at what the dose should be, right? If it goes poorly, how are you ever going to stop that and restart it and tell your child, well, let's try this again, right? Because if you have the frat test and it's positive, this is what they need. So if you rush it and it turns out poorly, what are you left with? Basically just a mess, because you're still going to have to address this need that they have. So having that patience of starting slow is the way to go, because if you don't, if you rush things too much, you might write off and say, oh, that didn't work, when that is exactly what your child needs. But it was a patience issue that then prevents them getting what they need. And again, that's why you want to use science, right? So there are people who are like, oh, let me just try leucovorin. Why? You don't know if your child needs it or not. Why would you waste time and 3 months or so trying to figure something out when you could just take a test? So when you have something that you're working on, right, you want to have a test that guides you. You want to give a reasonable amount of time. And you might have that conversation with your doctor, like, what's a reasonable amount of time? Leucovorin, 3 months is a reasonable amount of time to expect, a positive change. Not necessarily you won't see anything for those 3 months, but that is definitely more on the longer time frame. Whereas, let's say a candida infection, right? You would want to see something within 3 to 7 days. But again, you would hopefully have some type of lab testing that shows candida is an issue, and you're not just, giving supplements. You can actually quantify what the infection is. Is a prescription needed? Is a supplement needed? And that's how specific you want to get. So the more specific you are with your testing and with your strategy and your focus, it takes away the guesswork. And then you can always reevaluate, okay, in the time frame that I was expecting, was there a change? And yes or no? And if there's yes, then great. Then you can figure out, do I want to increase the dose? You can start to make different decisions that way. Whereas if you didn't see any change, then you can retest again, or that's the time to change to a different supplement or prescription. But you want to base everything in science to take that guesswork away.
Yeah. And it makes sense with the leucovorin. I mean, all irritability, sleeplessness are all signs of overmethylation, right? So like, of course, yeah. This child might not need this much of a dose. Maybe they need less of a dose.
Exactly. And there's no guidance. And this is one thing that is definitely frustrating for parents with autism, is they want to go to the doctor and say, just tell me the answer, right? Even with leucovorin, right? If they have a positive frat, they know they need leucovorin. Okay, what's the dose? The answer is going to be, well, we're going to start at this dose and we're going to work our way up until we see XYZ. And then maybe we might even go more. So there is a lot of ambiguity. And when a parent is stressed out and in like panic mode and stress mode, that's not the time that parents do well with uncertainty, right? When we're really stressed out, we want to know what's the answer. And so this is where that mindset and that self-care comes in, because there's not just one particular answer. There's a lot of this observation and really seeing what it is that your child needs, not what we think they need.
Yeah. And I think that's in any, regardless of autism, non-autism, child, adult, like in any healing journey, it's coming from a place of fear, right? That this isn't going to work, that this, and then it comes out as either anger or frustration or anxiety or whatever it might be. And
patience.
Yes, exactly. And so I think it comes back to, again, like, can you be patient with your body? Can you be patient with the process? Can you be patient with the fact that there is never one answer for everyone? There is always ambiguity. There is always implementation, evaluation, reiteration. Like, that is how healing goes. And it sometimes changes at different phases of life and different stages of life. And so I'm sure with children, we always find children are actually a little bit easier in a lot of cases than adults, because children don't have pre-existing belief systems already set in place of like, this is it. Friends are just, usually open to a lot more things. And so, you know, it's our kids are resilient, and I think they are amazing regardless of, you know, what health conditions they are dealing with or what situations we find them in. And I love that you have kind of created this platform and this place and space for helping families that are going through obviously something that you have yourself navigated. So I'd love to have you, you know, tell people where they can find you and where they can find help in this situation so that they can, you know, approach this in as strategic of a fashion as possible.
Yes. And that's what's needed, strategy. You definitely need strategy when you're dealing with such complexity. And that is what I learned. So we've built something called the Navigating Autism Platform. And I spell autism differently. It's AWE. And I really see it as that, because if you could imagine, some of these kids have, you know, headaches every day, stomach aches, all these different complexities that they're challenged with, but yet they're still getting up and trying to do their best and trying to engage in life. So we really see it as autism, where these are great kids and we're just trying to really understand what it is their health barrier is. It's not about changing who they are whatsoever. You really get to know your child in so many beautiful ways when you resolve these health issues. So we have a Navigating Autism Platform, and it walks parents through the different science, and they can say, okay, is that relevant to my child or not? This way they know nothing is missed, and they use science to guide them. They can order functional medicine tests through the platform. We also have health coaches that put them in small group pods so that they don't feel so lonely, because this is a challenge to go through. So you really want supportive people around you as much as possible. And then the platform also accepts flexible spending. So it's $98, as affordable as possible. And we make it as easy as possible for parents to get the information they need so that they can make really good decisions for their child.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. And we will link all of this out in the show notes. And if you are, again, someone listening today who is in need, or you know someone in need, share this episode with them, because I know that many people navigate this as, you know, a very lonely road. And you mentioned it before, they need community, and to know that nothing wrong with their child, there's nothing wrong with them. They're navigating this in ways that is going to be unique to them. And that's okay, because we're not all designed the same way, and we're not all meant to fit in a mold. So please share this episode, as I know so many people need this information. The way that you're approaching this, I would just say thank you, because obviously in functional medicine, we know we see this, and we need more providers like you who can recognize it all, right? With your conventional background in pharmaceutical and the science hat, but then also your personal experience. So thank you for what you are doing to help families. And I'm sure this is going to be a great resource for many.